chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Thank you all for tuning back in, and I'm really happy to be back with you. We've had some great shows over the past 2 weeks. I had my longtime partner at the Anti-Media, S.M. Gibson, in the house with us here at the Anti-Media Studio in San Diego, California. So we've been knocking the shows out 4 days a week together. Normally, I'm on Monday and Wednesday with my awesome panel, and S.M. Gibson is on Tuesday and Thursday, and of course, LaVon is on Friday. But Anti-Media Radio goes 5 days a week here on UCY.TV. You can also catch us at theantimedia.org/radio. And we're live at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time, and we go for an hour, hoping to boost it up to 2 hours in the coming month or two. That's something that we're working on, and we're really happy and excited that we're getting some more airtime here on UCY. And, of course, it's all made possible because everybody that's out there listening. And I'm really happy that the show's been growing, more and more people calling in, tuning in. We've been having some great callers. So make sure you check us out 5 days a week because you don't want to miss a show and you don't want to, not know what we're talking about, because sometimes we're going show to show talking about stuff like, in order, and you don't want to miss out. And also, if you can't catch us, you could also go over on YouTube and look up the Anti-Media Radio. Go to UCY TV's YouTube channel, subscribe to that, catch all the other awesome hosts here on UCY, because there's a bunch of different voices. We're not the only ones. There's people going like all hours of the day. And you could also listen on your phone, your laptop, whatever, any kind of internet-connected devices, you could listen to us. So there's no excuses to miss our show unless you just can't stand us, which I guess, that's understandable as well. Everyone's free to have their opinions. Let me introduce our panel here because we got a bunch of stuff to go over tonight. First off, my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Hey, man. Not a whole lot. Just pretty quiet on the news front for midweek.
Yeah, it is. We had those the caucuses over the weekend. And the Trump thing, Trump won in Nevada. The primary in South Carolina over the weekend, and then you had the Nevada caucus, which Trump won in a blowout, by the way.
That was a new low, though. That was a debacle.
Yeah, it was crazy. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And we also got Jake Anderson on the line, and he wrote a couple of awesome articles today on the Anti-Media. We're going to talk about a few of the things that he wrote about today. What's up, Jake?
Nothing's up, actually. I'm cautiously optimistic that America is, and the world is going to be perfect by tomorrow.
Yeah, man. So I guess the funniest thing that came out today is –
apparently the guy that created the movie Idiocracy is now, and keep in mind that there's been memes floating around about this for a while, for years now, where people are putting memes out there, including us, saying, hey, Idiocracy was not supposed to be a documentary, or, you know, Idiocracy is like the first fiction movie that turned into a documentary. I guess, you know, 1984 is another great example of fiction work that later on becomes kind of realistic. But, you know, the guy that helped create that movie, Ethan Cohen, tweeted out today. He said, I never expected Idiocracy to become a documentary. I mean, this is hilarious, man. I mean, this is crazy. And those not familiar, I mean, I don't know. I've seen Idiocracy once or twice. I can't remember it too well, but from what I remember, it was just this guy went into the future and the everything was backwards. People were just completely dumbed down. And
the premise was true. I mean, the people that are the least educated and make the least money tend to have more kids. So you extrapolate that over 500 years.
Yeah, and so the guy made this movie in 2009, and so apparently a lot has changed since then, because now he's saying, like, shit, I didn't expect this to become a documentary, man. So, you know, it's only been, you know, 7 years since the movie came out. What's changed since then? I mean, Jake, I know you've got some insight on this, man. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I'm not sure what specifically has changed in the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, we've certainly seen, you know, a lot more consolidation of corporate power, a lot more government, corruption in terms of, you know, civil liberty violations and whatnot. I'd say in regards to the Idiocracy thing, I definitely think that there is a general dumbing down of the discourse and a kind of like draconian social punishment and castigation of people who present alternative viewpoints. So I think we're definitely headed towards a cultural and technological breaking point, you know, here. And I think people are starting to become aware of that. Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the other thing, one of the other funny things this guy said was he thought that the worst thing that would come was everybody wearing Crocs, the shoes. It's kind of a funny joke because everyone says those shoes are ugly or whatever. But, I mean, this stuff is just beyond belief. I mean, when you watch that movie, you know, one of the funny things, and I've seen this meme floating around as well, is about how they were feeding the crops back then Gatorade, and they couldn't figure out why they couldn't get their crops to grow because they thought, you know, oh, well, crops need electrolytes, and that was like the common knowledge of the day.
And there's an Easter egg in the DVD of where it shows, you know, how are these idiots able to continually sustain themselves? Well, everything's automated, and the Easter egg is that the world population's kept exactly at 500 million, which we all know what a reference that is to, so...
Yeah, and you know, I've seen the meme floating around where it's a picture of Trump and they're sitting there saying, like, electrolytes is what the plants need, and it's like just having Trump in, replacing Camacho. President Camacho is one of the characters in the movie, and, you know, he's the president in the time, and the guy had, you know, jumped forward in time, or he was, like, frozen or something like that, and he went, you know, a couple hundred years frozen, he woke back up, and it was just everything was backwards. So, you know, I don't know. I guess it's funny, but at the same time, it's like, holy shit, is this the reality we're living in? Has this become Idiocracy? And I don't know if the timing of this was because of the whole Trump winning in Nevada. I mean, it's become pretty apparent. And for those listening to the show, over the last few months, maybe the last year or two, you know that we've been saying that Marco Rubio is the guy that the establishment is going to get behind. He's going to be the next Mitt Romney. They're going to put this guy forward, which, you know, the prediction we made is partially true here. is that, you know, Rubio is clearly the guy that they're putting forward. Every single endorsement is going to Rubio. The establishment is pushing him forward. He took second place in Nevada, and they're now they're telling everybody else drop out so that we could run Rubio against Trump. But, you know, Trump, it really does seem like now he's starting to become he's going to probably be the Republican nominee. I mean, there's not many ways that he can get knocked off the course at this point. He's won.
If he wins Texas, it's essentially a done deal, because people expect Cruz to handle that state, and Cruz is just turning into such a pitiful wuss man on stage that I don't think he's going to win his own state. And then, you know, it just becomes the whole superdelegate debacle on that side.
Yeah, I think we'll know. I think it's on Super Tuesday. I think Trump will pretty much clinch it. I mean, at this point, you know, for a while people were saying that the establishment people need to coalesce and that they need people like Cruz and whatnot to drop out so everyone get behind Rubio. But I've been hearing some analysis that actually that would help Trump, because the next series of states, a lot of them are winner take all. And so if Trump wins that, he'll take all the delegates. Whereas if they're spread out over three to four candidates, he'll get less delegates. But, you know, the fact of the matter is someone else has to win a state. Trump's just, he's winning, you know, he's winning. I guess that's all we can say.
He's on the verge of making Germany great again. That being said, the other side of the spectrum here, I mean, Trump's becoming pretty much the momentum is so high there that I don't really see him being knocked off course unless something drastic happens. I don't know if they have anything they can dig up. I think the thing with Trump is that most of his dirty laundry is pretty much already aired out, you know, and so there's not too much to be dug up on that guy that we know of.
And he keeps shooting himself in the foot, and it only raises his popularity, like saying he'd sleep with his daughter. I mean, the guy's a weird, crazy douchebag, and people love it.
Yeah. Romney, Mitt Romney came out today and floated the idea that there's some financial stuff that could come out about Trump and taxes and something like that. I mean, yeah, it would take a major revelation, a major scandal or revelation at this point, I think, to knock him off.
It would have to be really big. I mean, I don't see anything really deterring his support. And now from what I've noticed running our website and having access to the analytics, seeing what people read and what they don't read, what they want to read, what they don't want to read, I mean, it's pretty clear from all the stories we've posted, it's very obvious that Trump is the only Republican in the race that actually has a big base of organic support. I mean, he has a bunch of people, misguided or not, that support him, a bunch. And nobody else really does. I mean, Rubio has supporters, but it's almost all manufactured support. It's very shallow. If he dropped out tomorrow, all of his voters would go for somebody else. And you could say that for pretty much every other guy in the race. Now, Trump is the only guy with the actual fanatic base, where if the party decided that they really did want to screw him and take it to a brokered convention and steal the nomination from him, he could run third party and take a good chunk of people with him, you know, and that's very dangerous for the Republicans. This is their year to win. I think it's the Democrats' year to lose, and I think that's why they're running Hillary Clinton up there. So, you know, this is going to be a very interesting dynamic. As much as I can't stand talking about Trump, and as much I remember when he first launched his campaign, we wouldn't even talk about him because we figured it was just a joke, a fluke, or just some not serious. But, you know, this has become something very serious. Now, just to analyze Trump just a little bit here, because I want to get into what went on with the Democrats as well and what's going on in that side of the aisle. But, you know, the Trump thing, I see some positive and some very negative stuff with Trump. For one, and we've mentioned this before on the show, Trump, as evidenced by, like, all of the mainstream media, Trump is anti-establishment, or at least outside of the establishment. The Republican Party does not want him to win. The Republican power brokers and the financiers, the corporate-backed Republican Party, they don't want Trump. They want Rubio. And so just the simple fact that Trump is throwing a wrench into the highly, highly controlled electoral system in the United States. That I see as a positive, and it's going to be interesting to see how the establishment reacts and how they go about doing this. And now keep in mind, there's plenty of ways they can deal with Trump if he does get elected. I mean, there's plenty of layers of control they can put on him, and the very and depending on what he does. I mean, now he's talking about auditing the Fed and things like that. I mean, if he goes too far, you know, there could easily be assassination attempts and that kind of thing. I don't want to speculate too much here, but there's plenty of ways to control the guy. If he does get elected, even if they don't want him in there, and he starts doing things they don't want him to do, I mean,
he's got a lot to lose.
Yeah, there's ways to deal with a guy like Trump if he starts making too many waves. Yeah.
Bernie's the bigger threat because the guy doesn't give a hoot about money.
Yeah, Trump is an interesting wild card there. I don't think we've ever seen someone with that much hubris, gusto, money, and social capital trying to stick it to the establishment like that.
Yeah, and you know, Trump is very much a product of this bipartisan rhetoric, this extreme right wing, left wing, Republican, Democrat. I mean, they've been dividing and conquering the population of the United States for so long. And for so long, it's worked in their favor because it's like, all you Democrats, you can't trust Republicans, and all you Republicans can't trust Democrats. Now, behind the scenes, the guys up in Congress, they're bipartisan when it comes to shit like the TPP, when it comes to shit like the Empire, when it comes to things like, you know, militarizing the police and NSA surveillance and all this major policy that actually affects us personally. They're bipartisan, and the only time that they disagree is on like social issues and things that don't matter as much when it comes to the very grand scheme of things. But you know, technically they're pretty bipartisan when it comes to the operations of the empire, the deep state, you know, all the stuff that, you know, the really bad stuff that goes on. They all agree on that stuff. But there's been this rhetoric for so long that it's really turned the very active sides of each party into the extreme. And that's exactly why Trump is coming about. And there's other reasons as well that we're going to get into once we get past the talking about what's going on the Democrat side. You know, but the other side of Trump is this rhetoric, the anti-Muslim, the xenophobic, the anti-Latino rhetoric and stuff like that. That stuff is extremely dangerous. And it's causing a lot of hate. It's causing a surge in racism. At least it's becoming more evident, more apparent. I've read recently that the white supremacist groups have been overloaded with new support. And in fact, one group had to get a new server for their website because so many people were visiting their site. And a lot of this stuff.
And they're heavily infiltrated. That's what people need to understand. Things like the Black Panthers were a threat because they couldn't. But these other groups, these white supremacist groups, heavily infiltrated.
Yeah, there's FBI operatives within these ranks and stuff like that. And, you know, but, you know, Trump's rhetoric, as crazy as it is, there's a lot of people that buy into that stuff. And it has caused a surge of violence against Muslim Americans and Muslim anyone that looks Muslim aren't as safe walking down the street now. And, you know, it's caused a surge in racism. That's the very negative side of Trump. And that's something that needs to be, you know, at least for us here on the anti-media to combat that kind of stuff. We're never going to stop it all the way. But, you know, that stuff I can't stand. And like I said, there's pluses and positives and negatives when it comes to Trump. I think it's great that he's sticking it to the establishment. I think it's great that he's turned their own rhetoric and propaganda against them. I think it's great that, you know, they've turned the U.S. into this reality TV consumerism society, and Trump has been an integral part of that, and now he's using it to wield it back against the establishment. I find it so ironic and so entertaining and hilarious that he's able to do it against, you know, and they're sitting there like wondering what the hell they can do to stop the guy. That to me is like, okay, cool. I like seeing that happen. But
well, he's a backlash to TPP from American robber barons. I mean, there's a lot of people that are billionaires in this country that probably won't be when TPP passes. This is their horse.
That's interesting as well. I didn't think about that angle.
Yeah, and in many ways, you know, yeah, in terms of what you're talking about with xenophobia and racism and whatnot, his popularity, he's like the Obama of the right. He's like someone who came in and obviously the policies are very different and whatnot, but he's kind of this lightning rod for extremist thought. So all of these kind of racist, xenophobic people that didn't feel like they had a voice now are gravitating towards Trump as this kind of like free speech mecca, or this idea that he's, you know, going to embody the true America, when really it's just a coalition of idiot racists. I mean, I hate to be harsh, because there are elements of Trump that I do like, and not all of his supporters are racist idiots. But I watched a documentary, I watched a 20-minute video today that was like a rally of his and interviewing the people that were Trump supporters, and it's just kind of mind-blowing.
Was a trip.
Yeah, the kind of and look, I know it's that's just a small sample size, and you know, I'm not saying that this is in any way like the vast majority of Trump supporters, but there's definitely a huge component of idiocracy going on with Trump, and it's in many ways he's kind of placating people who are sad that they can't openly display their racism, you know.
And you notice too, like a huge part of his contingent are people that are wealthy. I mean, there's a guy online that said, "I have a net worth of $20 million, and I'm tired of the government just continually taking money from me for what?"
Yeah, that guy was annoying as hell. Yeah, I mean, he's every person who wants to bitch about paying taxes and just this. This fictitious idea of the other, of the foreigner that's going to come blow us up. I mean, it's an amalgam of everything that makes America scary is what Trump is, and he's also an amalgam of some good things as well. But I mean, we can't overlook, just because he's an outsider that's sticking it to the establishment. You're right, Nick. We can't overlook the fact that his rhetoric is toxic and has probably already cost lives and will definitely cost more lives.
Yeah.
And every despot and every dictator always starts by tantalizing the public with snippets of truth and tough man, strong man rhetoric. And look, there you go again. It works every time.
Yeah, man, exactly. And they're able to, he's able to take advantage of the economic insecurity of the middle class. I think most of his support comes from the white middle and working class. And you know, these are the group of people that have been hit the hardest after the financial crisis, man. You know, and a lot of people in the United States were already had it bad. But you know, the white middle class, the white working class, had it relatively good from like the 50s all the way up until about, you know, 2009. And after that, you know, after the financial crisis, the bubble popping, and all that stuff, that group of people have been on shaky economic ground. Many of them lost their houses. Many of them are still trying to dig their way out from the financial crisis. As we know, the labor participation rate is very low. In fact, it's pretty much the lowest it's been in decades. And so people are looking for answers, and you know, Noam Chomsky came out today. I don't know if you guys saw this article. Clara actually covered it. She's not going to be joining us tonight, that I know of. Maybe she'll come on later. But Clara wrote an article about what Chomsky had to say today in an interview with Alternet. But he basically was also saying he attributed part of the rise of Trump to a very 1930s type of economic scenario, social economic scenario. And I think that's very, very true. And that's also what's leading to the surge with Bernie Sanders as well. It's this economic insecurity. And think about Europe in the 30s. Think about the German Weimar Republic, the hyperinflation, the permanent depression. And out of those ashes rose Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. And so this is even though it's not as bad here economically as it was in Weimar Republic, or as it even was in the Great Depression, yet – You know, it's the same type of feeling that is going on back then that is driving candidates like Trump right now. And Trump's not alone. I mean, the fascist surge is going on across Europe as well, in England, France, Greece, Ukraine. I mean, you name it. All across Europe, there's a fascist right-wing insurgence going on, and nationalist type of tendencies going on in Europe greatly, especially now being even more, you know, even being fueled even higher now with the immigrant, you know, the migrant crisis. All the refugees coming out from Syria and the Middle East is adding fuel to the fire over there for these nationalist type of, you know, very fascist leaning parties. I mean, this is a global phenomenon. Trump is not alone. The United States, yeah, we're the sole remaining big empire, a superpower. So it is very notable here, but Europe is trending in that same direction. I mean, it's not a good trend that we're looking at, man. We're looking at a trend towards fascism across the Western world, and that cannot be good news for anybody.
And Europe's using this immigration, you know, crisis with as the catalyst for that. You're seeing the police state rise in France with the Permanent Patriot Act they just put in. And Germany's about to actually expel 1 million refugees, and I don't know where they're going to send them. So, yeah, this is pandemonium about to start.
When with Trump also, in terms of fascism, think about the media empire that he will engender if he gets into office. I mean, he's already, he's a, you know, rich business billionaire, but he has a lot of control on the media, and he knows how to play the media and running a reality TV show and all that stuff. This is a guy who could really kind of seal the deal on the complete and total symbiotic relationship of the media with the government and the state. I mean, what he could do to the state of journalism in this country is horrifying. I mean, it's already a pretty sad state we're in terms of mainstream media journalism. But God, if he's in power, he is going to be a complete and total media fascist.
That's so true. You know, it's so true.
Trump News Networks. I mean, can you not see it coming even when he's in office?
TNN. anyone wanted to read a little more on what Chomsky had to say? You got to appreciate Chomsky. He's a great philosopher, and you know he's very much on the left of things. And you know, we try to remain kind of neutral here on anti-media, but Chomsky is a very intellectual guy. Unfortunately, I heard that he endorsed Hillary Clinton, and I couldn't believe it. I literally couldn't believe it. As far as
he just thinks she's gonna win. I mean,
he's rich.
If you're
wealthy and you're voting for Bernie, you're actually either kind of crazy or you believe in his message. And right. You know, a lot of people are like, "Well, fuck him. They could go to college like I did. Blah 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 blah." Nobody understands the world's changing, and guys like him aren't going to vote. I mean, look at Will Ferrell switching from Bernie to Clinton when he found out he was going to make like $2 or $3 million less a year. Because he's going to be in that tax bracket. You're going to see a lot of celebrities and a lot of athletes. Anybody making over 250 is going to really not go with Bernie. Watch.
Well, that's been the trend so far.
I can't believe that. I don't know. I mean, maybe, I guess if all of a sudden I had a windfall of money and had $1 million or something, I guess maybe my tune would change, but I don't think it would. I think if you care about this stuff, you care about it, and you're willing to... You know, I mean, the unfortunate thing is just that our taxes are spent on such atrocious things. But I personally do not mind at all some of my income going to help with things that help. It's unfortunate that the state can't facilitate that.
And the crazy thing is, if you research it, federal income tax, only 10% of what's netted goes back to the U.S. The other 33% times three go to, or whatever it is, 30% times three, go to the original like investors in the United States corporations, so like the Vatican and the Queen and everything. So
all the debtors,
yeah, you know, all the debtors. Yeah,
I mean, we're still paying money.
Exactly, we're still paying them. They had us in that, you know, loophole for what, 200-300 years already. So
Yeah, and we've been there, and this is you know, something with Bernie here that I definitely, you know, because recently he talked about how he's gonna have to end up raising taxes for most of the working people. You know, the problem is that if you add up like all the taxes and stuff that people that are in the United States pay, you know, it adds up to pretty much a Western Europe type of tax rate. I mean, it's different because in Western Europe, it's like, hey, look, we're just going to take 40% off the top out of your paycheck, and we're going to give you free college, and we're going to give you all this huge safety net. And I mean, it works out for them because that's what they use it for. For the United States, you know, we still pay about 40% or higher in taxes for the average working person. But we don't get what we're paying for. You know what I'm saying? I mean, most of our money, like you said, it's going to pay back debt. It's going to pay to the deficit.
To the military. To the
empire. Yeah, it's going to the foreign policy.
And the thing is, we don't have a social safety net here that really amounts to anything. And that's the biggest problem. Like, for instance, I knew somebody who, you know, their appendix burst, no insurance, and went bankrupt. And now for 7 years, you know, even though they work full time, they can't finance anything. And that's the stupid system and the stupid game that we let these guys play with us. Like, we feel like we owe it to the big banks to continue this system. And the system is just bullshit.
And, you know, that's why I wish Bernie Sanders would be more muscular when it comes to cutting the defense budget and redirecting that money towards safety net. I mean, we don't got to raise taxes on anybody, especially not working class people. We can cut the budget from the huge, huge military industrial complex and shift it over to helping people pay for welfare, for college, for all the safety net stuff, for Social Security and all that stuff. And that's a little more towards like the stuff that Ron Paul used to talk about. But I think there's the big difference there. And this is why Bernie Sanders is actually still given somewhat of a chance by the media, because he kind of is hands off when it comes to the foreign policy and the empire. And that's the only reason why he's able to be up there talking. If he was out there saying, look, let's end the empire and do away with it and send all that money back to our safety net to build infrastructure to focus on the United States, well, guess what? He would not be on TV, and he would get 30 seconds of speaking time in the debates. You know what I mean?
Think about our country, dude. Like, since World War II, we've been paying this income tax, right? And that's been going basically straight to the military-industrial complex. You're talking about, at this point, several trillion dollars, if not into the tens of trillions, right? So you have this huge monolithic force that controls everything in the whole world, dude. Just like they always say, and Goldman Sachs is basically its PR firm. If you think about it that way, the military in the U.S., basically it's Pax Americana. Who can really compete with us? Not even if the whole world fought us at one time. Would we really lose if we – I mean, Jake, you know, you do DARPA stuff all the time. I'm sure we have a clone army by now.
I'm DARPA, dude. I'm DARPA. You know?
Do we not have a clone and drone army already waiting?
Probably. I have no idea. I mean –
They seem like they don't care.
We don't know what they're really doing. Like, anything that would really cause people to lose their minds is completely classified black budget. You know, they probably have God knows what they're doing, man.
Because they act like they could fight everyone at the same time, and they're prodding everyone and grabbing resources and then acting like, you know, oh, you know, Israel and Saudi Arabia pressured us and lobbied us, and they have two patsies. And those patsies are about to get squashed in a big proxy war. I mean, we should probably talk about that at some point.
I think they probably have some electromagnetic pulse EMP stuff going on, where they feel like that they could neutralize any kind of nuclear weapon at this point. And that's why they're so scared of terrorism, is because it doesn't require this massive military or anything like that. I mean, someone with a suitcase or a knife could cause – I mean, look what they did. You know, look what somebody did on 9/11. I mean, they used our own they used planes to do it. You don't need nukes anymore. You know, if that's why the whole threat of terrorism, to me, it's so anomalous and strange. What Hamas was doing in Israel Like a decade and a half or 2 decades ago, they were doing it a lot back then. I'm sure it's still going on. It would just get on a bus and blow it up. If there were really a jihadist network of thousands of terrorists that wanted to kill us, they could easily wreak havoc on us without major weaponry.
Exactly.
I mean, can anyone answer that? Can anyone tell me why the terrorists aren't blowing up buses? If they really want to kill us so bad, they could easily just blow up buses. That's what they were doing in Israel.
You know, they got to be waiting for the perfect chance, you know?
But that's Al-Qaeda, at least in these, you know, cartoonish profiles they have of the terror groups. It's Al-Qaeda that wants the big symbolic things. ISIS apparently just wants to slaughter and kill us. Well, why aren't they doing it? I mean, it's crazy.
It is. It's very complicated, man. And that's the thing, is that now the empire, you know, they gave up on the Cold War, and I guess they're trying to restart that up. We're out there today fighting a shadow war. We're fighting against terrorism. It's an idea. It's a tactic. You know what I mean? It's like it's a world war that we're waging right now. We're in dozens of countries actively, and we've got bases in like 1,000 of them. We got 1,000 bases in like 100 countries. You know, and we're waging this shadow war against an idea and a tactic. And it's just something that it can't be won. You know, and the more we fight against terrorism, the more we send drones into Libya, the more we occupy Iraq, the more we keep our troops in Afghanistan, well, we're just going to keep creating more and more terrorists, you know, and it's an endless perpetual warfare. The only people benefiting greatly from this is the defense establishment that makes all the money and all the weaponry. And unfortunately, it's socialism for the working American people. We get to pay taxes to finance all this stuff, and it's capitalism for the defense manufacturers that get to privatize all the profits and make all that money, you know. And it
amounts to a $400 50-inch TV screen. That's what you get for it.
Yeah, and expensive gas. it's a sad state of affairs. At the beginning of the show I mentioned that the Democratic primary had already taken place in South Carolina. That's not actually the case. The Democratic primary is going to go off on Saturday. Hillary Clinton is expected to win. I'm not sure why. I don't know how anybody is supporting Hillary Clinton. She is a complete warmongering war criminal.
Mi abuela.
Yeah, she's your abuela. She's not mine. She's like the evil babysitter that used to pull your hair and spank you when you were a kid. but yeah, man, I mean,
it's also crazy how much support she has from African Americans, given how detrimental some of her and her husband's policies have been to the African American community.
Yeah,
and how she referred to the teens as needing to come to heel or something ridiculous like that.
That is a really weird phenomenon. I'm not sure why that is. I know the media narrative has been kind of that she was just, you know, that she naturally was just going to get the minority vote. And I don't know why that is. As Jake, as you mentioned, she helped her she helped Bill Clinton do a bunch of stuff that decimated the black community in the United States. I mean, the crime bill that was like a $30 billion bill that created a bunch of new crimes, created a bunch of new prisons that mostly affected African Americans in the United States. The welfare quote unquote reforms that they did, which had a detrimental impact in the African American community as well. And yeah, I mean, just the track record there with Hillary Clinton and minorities is just awful. It's completely
There's a story from the 90s that, you know, I'm a little bit older than you guys, that I remember Clinton, Bill Clinton, becoming like the blood king of the U.S. I don't know if you guys remember, where he had set up a special program where they were getting prisoners reduced sentences or like perks if they would donate blood regularly. And then Clinton himself was like just selling it on the open market, and they had to only shut it down because so much of the blood was tainted, because it was, you know, from prison where they do all kinds of God knows what. And that was a huge scandal, man, that just kind of he wiped it off and paid people off and never did any time. But, I mean, that's what we're talking about, man. We're talking about the Dixie Mafia. That's what they call themselves when they were actually asked. It's a bunch of good old boys that get into every manner of criminal activity and use the political and justice system to get out of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous what this family has gotten away with. And
they're like a kinder, gentler Bushes.
Yeah, but, you know, worse, because they don't get the heat that the Bushes got. You know, and the Clintons, they're so smooth. And look at Hillary. I mean, the Justice Department won't even put their hands on her. You know, and
because of Loretta Lynch, that's why.
Yeah.
And then they're about to push her into the Supreme Court. Could you imagine that?
Yeah, that and the Obama administration. And, you know, she took the bullet for them multiple times. And she's done so many things in her career, just taking the bullet for people. And
she worked with Hillary 20 years ago when Hillary was a lawyer at this Rose whatever legal firm. I mean, these are all career people that work with these people. And people like Vince Foster, if you look into it, pay the price and die for this corruption.
Yep. I mean, it's just all bad, you know. And over looking at the Latino community, I mean, Hillary Clinton in 2009, when she was in the State Department, she helped enable a military coup in Honduras. I mean, this is just, I mean, how many repeated offenses do you need to look at? I mean, NAFTA was signed under Bill Clinton. This has decimated the Mexican economy.
And you know what Honduras was about, Nick? It was about groundwater. It was about Nestle. It was literally about that, dude. It was blue gold.
Wouldn't surprise me, man. Would not surprise me at all. You know, and this is just, you know, repeated mistakes here by the Clintons, and they just get a pass. And
they signed the agreement with Russia to give them uranium that the BLM started grabbing under eminent domain, which led to the whole Bundy debacle. We're giving uranium to Russia. Think about that. What's the only thing you use uranium for?
Nuclear enrichment.
There you go. So let's arm our enemies, or our so-called enemies, who have, I don't know, like 20,000 troops within the U.S. at all times.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't understand it. And every news outlet is, oh, well, Hillary Clinton's got the support of the minority. I can't help but think that the only reason Hillary Clinton is getting support from minorities is because the media is constantly saying that Hillary Clinton has the support of the minorities.
You are they really even voting, or are they that disenfranchised? That's the whole thing. That's why they're trying to knock Bernie off the pulpit, because he's trying to actually give them power.
Yeah, exactly, man. I don't really see a reason for minorities to come out and vote. If it's Hillary Clinton that's going to be winning and Donald Trump, why even vote? I mean, you get one asshole or the other. I mean, it's bad. I think Bernie Sanders would be the natural candidate for the minority vote, but he is discounted on that end. And again, it's really the establishment playing its cards, and they want Hillary Clinton to be up there. I really do think that they want her to run to lose. I don't think she has a chance to win, because she's got too many skeletons in that closet. There's been talk of indictment. There's been talk of subpoenas regarding the email scandal. And there's just constantly more and more information coming out of these emails. And I mean, if she's running against Trump, I think Trump would pick her apart, man. I think Trump would.
Yeah, he'll kill her.
He'd beat Hillary Clinton easily. Yeah,
he'll kill her in the court of public opinion.
I don't know. That's not what the polls are saying, but I mean,
the polls are saying that she loses to Trump, but Bernie beats him.
But it's close. And what you're not, or what you need to remember, is that Trump has a ceiling. I mean, I do think he'll court some of the independent vote, but as many people that love Trump, there's just as many people, if not twice as many, that hate him. And
but that voting base gets out, though.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is the voting base doesn't need to go to work, doesn't need to miss work to go vote. They're going to vote. They're going to stump. They're going to go to these preliminaries and caucuses. They're rabid, dude. That's the thing, is they're actually a powerful kind of political machine.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. Hillary versus Trump, I think it would be I mean, if nothing else, it'd be entertaining, you know, and I hate to put the fate of the country and maybe the world in that, you know, in
that's a lose-lose
scope. Yeah, I mean, but it would be entertaining to see Trump taking on Hillary.
Then we all go to Canada, right, Nick?
Yeah, we're going to go to Canada to this island out there that is offering refuge to America's, to Americans if Trump wins.
It's 10 grand to get in, though.
I'd probably actually go to Mexico over Canada, but hey, that's just me. I live 10 minutes from the Mexican border, so I got a quick, easy out. If you know,
they'll just TPP you back into the U.S. extradite.
I'm gonna go to Mars, man.
Fast track. You know, speaking about why it is that Bernie Sanders and Trump are gaining this momentum they have, I think most of it comes from economic insecurity. I think if you look at Bernie Sanders' platform, it's almost solely economic, and you know, some social issues sprinkled in, and he's been known to be very weak on foreign policy. As I mentioned earlier, I think that, you know, he can go much further. Then again, if he did go further on foreign policy, he wouldn't be given any airtime on TV or in the debates or anything like that. So I think maybe, you know, there's a possibility that that's why he's being hands-off with foreign policy, is because he knows that he'd get the Ron Paul treatment if he went and said, hey, we're going to slash the military budget and redirect all that stuff so that old people can get retirement.
But how was Obama so good at foreign policy? He was just a freaking junior senator. He never had anything on the world stage either, just because he had a younger you know, he was in Indonesia and other places when he was in his youth, didn't make him ready for the world stage, but people took a chance on him. And the thing is, it's all about your cabinet.
That's different, though, because, you know, see, Obama, as much as he was a popular candidate, he was an insider, you know what I mean? And I think Bernie, that's the difference, is Bernie Sanders is truly an outsider. And so they don't trust him to just follow the orders. You know, when he gets in office, it's like, hey, bro, you just got to, you know, you got to go topple governments like Libya, and you got to try to topple governments in Syria. And so I'm not sure Bernie Sanders would play along with that. You know, and so that's why he's not being given a fair shake. Obama, I mean, Obama ran against Bush's foreign policy, but he got in office and he continued it. You know what I mean? It made it worse, in fact. And so I think Obama was an insider, and they knew that they had him under control. I don't know if they have that for Bernie Sanders, because I don't think Bernie
they all
Sanders
are, man. Nah, they have him. He would do whatever as long as it was something that wouldn't affect his domestic policy. That's the thing. You're not going to go against the military-industrial complex. You can't.
It's true. It's true. You can't, because you'll get no airtime. You won't be able to talk to anybody. No one will hear your message.
Unless we all do, which their contingency plan is going all drone and all automated.
So on this topic, man, because, you know, like I said, Trump and Sanders are both running on this economic platform. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, the reason why people are supporting these candidates is because we're dealing with economic insecurity in the United States ever since the financial crisis of 2008, 2009. The economy hasn't really regained its footing. I mean, for the most part, the working class people have the middle class has shrunk greatly. The working class people have had stagnant wages, lower standard of living. Sure, the economy has recovered for corporate giants, and you know, the GDP is recovering and stuff. But all that wealth is only being, you know, kind of assumed by the very rich. And that's why these candidates are making money. But Jake has an article up today on the anti-media about this new Boston Dynamics robot, which is also owned by Google. And this thing is frightening, dude. This thing is so human-like. And they have it in a warehouse picking up boxes, stocking shelves, and stuff like this. But we have a title up on the anti-media called "Here's the Robot That Is Going to Take Your Job." And this, to me, and we actually covered this just recently. Was it last week or the week before? Jake also covered how recent studies showed that, you know, the U.S. is poised to lose 80 million jobs as robotics and artificial intelligence automation takes over the U.S. economy. And that's also reflected in Europe. The U.K. is going to lose up to 50% of their jobs as well. So, you know, these advancements by robotics and artificial intelligence are set to displace a bunch of the workforce. And so we're looking at a scenario coming in the next decade or two where we're going to be dealing with even more economic uncertainty, especially when it comes from the working class. Jake, I mean, give us a little insight here, man. What do you make of this new robot? And overall, I mean, what can we see coming here?
The new robot, his name is Atlas, and he's really hot. And no, he's a
and he shrugged.
Atlas shrugged. Yeah, Atlas pushed down is more the video that is surging around the internet just shows the Boston Dynamics employees knocking him down with a hockey stick, but which I'm sure will not cause artificial intelligence in the future to kill us in our sleep. But the new Boston Dynamics is, like you said, it's a Google-owned company, and they've been working for years on this robot. But the new iteration,
they're also a DARPA contractor, right?
Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah, DARPA. Yeah, there's a very symbiotic relationship with DARPA and these private contractors, especially when it comes to robotics, because, you know, DARPA, I mean, that's the future of warfare is robotics. I mean, they're trying to make little bees and insects, and insect drones is the future as well. I mean, it's going to happen. And but with this robot, it's capable of, you know, navigating across the terrain and lifting objects, lifting like a 10-pound box. And so this is kind of an example of a robot that could probably take a factory job. And stuff like this will take over. You know, the first – there was actually a special on it on PBS tonight about it too, but it was kind of just a regurgitation of information. The first jobs that will be kind of drivers. Drivers – I mean, driverless cars – are coming here in the next decade, and so Uber and Lyft, you better enjoy it while you can, because those jobs are not going to be available for much longer, and taxi drivers as well. Fast food workers, I mean, it's going to be very soon that the major fast food companies are going to be able to automate a lot of the processes. Cashiers as well. These are all jobs that are going to be easily replaced by robots. And the estimate is the Bank of England, their estimate was 80 million American jobs, 15 million British jobs, which is approximately 50% of the workforce of both of those countries.
We need free college.
What's that?
We're going to have free college.
Yeah, it's a lot of things are going to have to change, because the nature of work is going to change. And with that, the nature of citizenship is going to have to change. So we have some growing pains ahead of us in terms of humans having to come to terms with kind of a very existential place here, where, you know, we for so many centuries and we defined ourselves by work and what we do, and that's not going to be as fluid of a definition anymore, like what you do, your job. People are going to have to get very entrepreneurial, I think. They're going to have to new ways of generating money are going to have to be thought up by people, and it's, you're not going to be able to just sit around on your ass anymore and go, you know, clock in and then come home. You're going to have to, things are going to change. I don't know. I mean, I sure as hell don't have the answer.
Things are going to be really different. One of the things, watching this video, and it's up on the Anti-Media, you can go check this out. The video is called Atlas, the Next Generation. The article is, here's a robot that's going to take your job. But I was watching this video and watching the robot walking over this just rugged terrain in the snow. And, he, you know, it's like slipping. It'll slip just like a human being. If you're walking through the snow and you slip, this thing is able to catch its balance. It was so human-like when it's walking through the snow. It's frightening. And then it goes into the warehouse and is able to pick up boxes, stack boxes on shelves. I mean, this thing, you can program it to do whatever the hell you want. And so this thing is, sooner or later, we're going to have these, I don't know what you want to call them, androids or, you know, robots or drones, whatever you want to call these things, autonomous robots. They're going to be quickly replacing pretty much every manual labor job in the country. And I don't know the percentage that these jobs make up. I'm guessing it's at least 50%, judging by the projected numbers of job loss in the United States. But pretty much everybody that's working a blue-collar type of job is going to be at risk to losing it to robots. And not only that, white-collar jobs are now being replaced by AI, automation, and smart programming, you know, learning computers and things like that. Not even the people that are middle, upper middle class are not going to be safe. They are not going to be safe from automation. All these jobs can be replaced. And that leaves us kind of in a sticky situation here, because especially here looking at this robot, and this is probably, I don't know, I know Japan has a lot of great robots and stuff too. I'm guessing this Boston Dynamics, again, it's a Google-owned company. I'm guessing this robot is probably one of the most advanced in the world that we know of, that the public is aware of. And again, this, we come back to this issue that it's owned by Google, which is owned by the parent company of Google is Alphabet, which has surpassed Apple as the single wealthiest corporation in the world.
And they're changing their name to Umbrella Corp.
Yeah, they might as well. You know, and this is the issue here, and this is what Stephen Hawking has warned against, is that if we allow all of this technology, which in fact could end up being like the liberation of the human race from manual labor, if we allow it to be monopolized by companies like Google, Alphabet, Apple, Amazon, and you know, who knows who else is going to be a player in these games, if we allow this technology to be monopolized, it's going to wind up enslaving all of us. If this technology was shared throughout the population and it would have, you know, the people that were losing their jobs wind up owning the robots that were doing the jobs for them, well, then those people would be able to generate wealth. They'd be able to have more free time. They'd be able to go get education. They'd be able to do a bunch of creative things, maybe science or art or whatever it is they'd rather be doing instead of working in a factory. I know everyone working in a factory or in a warehouse, I know they'd rather be doing something else, but they got to do it to pay the bills. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's this really utopian scenario that could happen, which is kind of the Buckminster Fuller future, where it's like robots do all the hard work and we get to sit back and we get, you know, we have food and we have electricity and we have education and we get to do what we want to do. Or we have this extremely dystopian future, which unfortunately is the direction that we're trending in, because of the monopolization of all this technology, where the robots do all the work and all the humans are pretty much left, pretty much rendered useless. Because what the hell are we, what are we going to be used for since we can't work anymore? Since the robots do a better job, they don't need healthcare, they don't need retirement, they don't have sick days, they're never late. You know, I mean, you name it. The robot, when it comes to manual labor, is like better than a human being in every aspect, as long as we can get the robots good enough. You know, we're going to end up in the situation where everybody that's in the working class is going to be out of a job, and then what?
Or you'll have to become one with the robot.
Yeah. You know, and that's there kind you of, go. You know, that's yep. kind of like the, what was that movie? Surrogates? No. I think.
Surrogates? Yeah.
That
yeah.
Nope, you're right.
That was yeah. one. Yeah, kind of like that.
That's actually a pretty good movie.
That's feasible. Good. I mean, you could probably do that now if you had to.
Yeah, and but you know, this is, we're talking about extremely greedy corporations, and with the example of DARPA, we're talking about us funding it too. The taxpayer is funding their own demise, and it's not the first time they're doing it, but that, you know, that's exactly what's happening here. You know, this is very, I can't stress this enough. And DB, you and me have been talking about this since day one on this radio show. The single largest issue facing the United States. I mean, if Donald Trump really wanted to talk about something that mattered, he'd be talking about this issue of automation and robots and how that is going to drastically reshape the landscape of labor in the entire world in the coming years.
Yeah, because the elites in the current world stage, their solution is to start war, to depopulate so they don't have to worry about where all these people are going to fit in the same damn economy running for the next century, instead of moving on to a Star Trek truly democratic socialist economy where we have Maslowian needs met by machines and we're free to either create or be artistic or be an entertainer or whatever. That's what we want.
Yeah, and so, you know, this is the fork in the road we're facing right now. Jake, man, great article, great coverage recently of DARPA. Thank you all for tuning in. DB, thanks for joining us. We're back here tomorrow, same place, same time, 5 days a week. Anti-Media Radio out.
Do the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go do the stereo. Stereo.